Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is Hammond.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to Friendly Atheist Podcast. If you like what you're listening to, please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. Or go to iTunes and give us all the stars in your reviews.
I read them. Hammond, happy May the 4th.
Oh, God.
It's Star Wars Day.
You
know what that means. We are still not watching Star Wars.
It's happening.
Hammond has,
Soon.
Have I told you that every Friday, Mikey passive-aggressively, like, G-chats me, I'm like, so are we going to have time to watch Star Wars with Hammond tonight? I'm like, no, he has human children.
Right. I just got to discard them for a day and then we'll figure this out. Let's get going with this because there's some stuff.
Yeah.
Let me start with this one because it's not in the atheist world and I definitely want to talk about it.
Okay.
There's this guy, Paige Patterson. His name is Paige. He's the president of... He was the president of the Southern Baptist Convention, the head of the Southern Baptists, in 2000. That's his role. Now he's the president of the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. So this is a guy who has, I mean, he's legitimately called a Christian leader.
Okay.
He's been revered in these institutions. He's been elected to these high posts within these denominations and stuff. And he's been around for a while. So it's not that there's anything new about this guy that just happened.
Mm-hmm.
But what seemed to happen this week is that old audio from 2000 was posted on a website. It's on somebody's blog.
Uh-huh.
But and according to the blogger, this audio has been around for a little while. It just never got any traction.
Is this blogger...
Not anyone I've heard of. Okay. I don't even know if that person is anonymous or not. I don't think I heard a name associated with it.
But you don't know, like, conservative, liberal, atheist, religious?
You know what? It's a good question. I think the person is religious,
okay,
but maybe has criticisms of people in leadership. And so anyway, here's the question that I would start this conversation with.
Okay.
If a woman came up to you and said, my husband is physically abusive to me and tells me, you know, deal with it because your job is to be submissive, what advice do you give that woman?
Me, Jessica?
You, Jessica.
I would physically steal her away and bring her to a group of women who say, nobody has to hurt you anymore. So you're saying that this hypothetical woman is being abused by her husband and has been told to stick with it?
Because a woman's role in those type of conservative relationships.
Oh, so she on her own has come to that.
Maybe she believes that it's her role to be submissive to her husband, but her husband also reminds her, like, hey, submissive, you.
Yeah, I would say that's not how it do. And maybe get out of there and find a safe space because things like that escalate.
Right.
Make sure there's no guns in the house.
That too. I think the thing that sticks out, the escalating thing, it's going to get worse.
Yes.
So anyway, Paige Patterson was at some conference and he was asked this hypothetical, I believe. Like, what would you say to this woman in this position? And this is what the audio from 2000, this is what he says in this panel discussion. It's a long answer. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'll read you some of the excerpts. Let me respond that it depends on the level of abuse to some degree.
Yikes. Red flags.
I never in my ministry counsel that anybody seek a divorce.
Oh,
I'm going to go down,
red
down,
flag
down.
Number two. I'm just going to go ahead and tally. Two red flags. Drying them.
More often, when you face abuse, it is of a less serious variety.
That's three.
But all abuse is serious, and there are two or three things that I say to women in those situations.
Okay.
First of all, you must not forget the power of prayer.
Okay, four red flags.
Yeah. And at some point he's like, get on your face before God and ask him to intervene.
Get on your face? All right, Doug.
That's the transcript. That's... And ask him to intervene.
Now, do we count that red flag as just the power of prayer? Is that number five? I think that was number five.
It's,
you know,
the idea,
what?
Like, really, your advice is pray harder. That's
with,
not,
with your face?
With your face. But, like, it's not, that's not going to help. Yep. But then here's the thing. He tells the story in this answer of his about a woman who took his advice and prayed. And he says this as a, see, I'm right. This is how he's this is where he's going with the story.
I'm already drawing the flag. Go ahead.
I'm going to read this one. Wait for it.
Okay.
I'll just give you one brief example of it. I had a woman who was in a church that I served in. She was being subject to some abuse. And I told her, I said, all right, I want you to do this every evening. I want you to get down by your bed just as he goes to sleep. Get down by the bed. And when you think he's just about asleep, you just pray and ask God to intervene out loud, quietly.
Sounds but like I said, passive aggressive prayer.
But I said, you just pray there. And I said, get ready because he may get a little more violent, you know, when he discovers this.
That's another one.
And sure enough, he did. She came to church one morning with both eyes black, and she was angry at me and at God in the world for that matter. And she said, I hope you're happy. And I said, yes, ma'am, I am. And what she didn't know when we sat in church that morning was her husband had come and was standing at the back the first time he ever came. I'm skipping down. Basically, he's saying he found God that day, even though he just beat her and punched her in the face. And then he closed his panel discussion answer with this. Remember, when no one else can help, God can. And in the meantime, you have to do what you can at home to be submissive in every way that you can and to elevate him. So she had two black eyes.
Was him capitalized? Him
no, not God. Elevate your husband.
I just need to make I'm keeping track of my
she
red flags.
Had two black eyes, but it was okay because her husband came to God, is the story. So here's the thing. This was in 2000. The audio resurfaced this week. And now it became a big deal because a lot of more popular Christians, especially on Twitter, not only started sharing this audio, but commenting exactly, I think, what you're thinking and I'm thinking, which is that I don't care if you're religious or not. That's horrible advice. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of Christians would say prayer is part of the answer. But one, so is divorce. Uh-huh. So is reporting your husband to the authorities. So is, counseling. I don't know, counseling. There's a lot of other things involved
restraining
here.
Orders.
Yeah. And so people started speaking out against it. People started trashing Southern Baptist culture because here's the thing. It's not just one guy making a douchey answer. He's speaking on behalf of Southern Baptists. This is what they believe.
Here's the thing, though, is yes, we should hold Southern Baptists as a culture accountable for that kind of language. But also, this is not isolated to the Southern Baptist sect. We just have gone through this with the Mormon church that they did the same thing of like, stay with him. That's what they advise. Catholics, the same thing. They don't. You know, they won't allow you to get divorced. So it's unless this is not, I guess what I'm saying is like, this is less a Christian thing, less a Southern Baptist thing. I think it's a more religious patriarchal.
Yeah.
Which I know like people, I think people glaze over when you talk about the patriarchy and all that, but this is exactly what it is, that women are submissive and thereby they have to kind of take this shit. Like, this is its most fundamental chunk.
And as people started speaking out and calling, and by the way, they asked him, like, called out the seminary that he did. Like, what are you teaching at this college of
yours? Yeah, because he did not come up with that on his own.
Right. And he actually issued a statement, Patterson did, later, basically saying, like, he's the victim in all this because people are rehashing this old dialogue. He said, for the record, I have never been abusive to any women. First of all, no one said that, but two...
Listen, I'm sorry, I don't care if he has or not. You don't brag about not beating women up.
I've never choked my baby.
Oh my God, congratulations. Hammett, you're so brave.
He also said, I've never counseled or condoned abuse of any kind. But saying stay in an abusive relationship and pray instead of...
That is some top-level tap dancing. Yeah. That is, I never said to a dude, yeah, you should like smack your wife around.
Right.
What I also did not say is, hey, leave a guy who, like, lays his hands on you because fuck that.
Right. He also said, you know, and this well, why didn't he say this before? He said any physical or sexual abuse of anyone should be reported immediately to the appropriate authorities, as I have always done.
But what does he consider the appropriate authorities?
That's a good question.
Because a lot of people say the appropriate authorities are your church elders. Yeah,
that's very true. And I don't know what he means by that, but at least that's a slightly better response. But he didn't say that in the audio.
He didn't say that in the audio. And also, it does feel like too little too late.
Yeah. He added that, and this is the part where he's like doubling down. Okay. He said, The Bible makes very clear how God views divorce. That's why he doesn't recommend that at all.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing he said about that example he gave about the woman with the two black eyes, he said, for sharing this illustration, especially in the climate of this culture, I was probably unwise. Like,
what?
I guess in the Me Too era, he shouldn't have said, well, here's the silver lining.
It was almost 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, which makes me think like, or I'm sorry, that's true. It happened in 2000 is when he shared that story. But I wonder if he's been doing it since. I don't know.
What a monster.
Now, let me tell you some. Oh, and when the Washington Post emailed him for a comment, like, come on, it's been whatever, almost 20 years. What do you have to say? He said, 75 years of experience teaches me, though a slow learner, that no one's life is made materially better by entering these discussions. I have said enough.
Okay. Sorry, I just swallowed my wine.
Which is a weird way to say I'm sorry.
No. Wait. Can you repeat that? Because I don't understand what he was trying to say.
No one's life is made materially better by entering these discussions rehash what he said.
Oh.
So I've said enough. Like, as if his statement on seminary's website.
I would disagree with that on his face. I would say if he said some really problematic shit, and I will grant you that this is 20 years ago, not that it's... To be clear, not that it's ever been okay to beat your spouse, no matter your gender. But if you did say some like garbage shit in a time where people were less scrutinous of this kind of language, I think this is a fucking excellent time to bring it back up. And I think you can reflect back and say, this woman who I talked to or whomever I told this story to, hey, I said some bogus shit back in the day. Let's all take a step back, really reestablish the situation now that we're starting to maybe take like violence against women kind of seriously. I don't know. I just think it's... Yeah, I don't
the Southern Baptist Convention, as far as I can tell still, hasn't denounced the comments or really said much of anything. There are some individual Southern Baptists who have said some basic, like, abuse is bad, but none of them called this guy out specifically because he's one of their ringleaders.
Yes, and also, I think when they use a blanket term like abuse, I think that's obfuscating in a lot of ways because I think what they think is abuse is... like punching your spouse in the face, right? Like it's not, but abuse realistically takes on a lot of different forms, and whether that's emotional abuse or mental abuse, or obviously physical abuse is a thing, but like when your spouse is extremely controlling to the point that you don't feel like you can do what you want, that is also a form of abuse. Right. And I don't think that they have the wherewithal to speak with any kind of nuance. So it's problematic that these people who are supposedly moral leaders of their people and whom people go to for advice, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm sure they do not understand the nuances of what abuse actually looks like on the ground because it doesn't start with getting decked in the face. It doesn't start there.
And even in 2000, Southern Baptists, like, they were known for their patriarchal culture. Like,
and
this is not new.
And
proud of it. And this is not exactly news. Some progressive Christians were quick to denounce this. Rachel Held Evans said, this teaching kills women, full stop.
What is Rachel Held Evans?
She's a progressive Christian, written a lot of books.
Do we interview her?
I don't know that we did. Good person. She says a lot of good stuff when it comes to evangelical culture. Even if you hate divorce, this is Caitlin Beattie, who writes for, I believe, Christianity Today. Even if you hate divorce, this is a gross abdication of pastoral and legal responsibility.
Good.
Here's another one that was interesting. Jonathan Merritt, who's a journalist, who basically took that audio, that blog with the audio on it, and really made it explode this week. He said this is not just a one-time thing for Patterson where he says stupid stuff. He actually linked to a video that's only maybe 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old.
Cool.
And I'm going to read this one because it's batshit crazy.
Am I going to
Because
hate
he's, he was telling a story during a sermon he was giving. And by the way, I just noticed that they took down that video in the past several days.
Did they?
Don't worry, everyone got copies of
it.
But here's what he was saying in the sermon. The situation, I believe, is it's like there were two young boys who were mischievous and he was about to talk to them or something. And maybe their mother was nearby in church. Like, they were sent to the principal's office, but like at Sunday school, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So this is the story he says. About that time, a very attractive young co-ed walked by. Uh-huh. And she wasn't about more than 16, but let me just say, she was nice. Oh, it goes on. As she walked by, they didn't think that Mama was paying any attention to them, and one young man turned to the other one, and he said, "Man, is she built." In the middle of the synod, she stopped, wheeled around, slapped a hand over his mouth, loosened his teeth, said, "Young man, don't you ever say anything like that again. If you do, I'll mop up the face of the earth with you." I saw my opportunity. I said, "Ma'am, leave him alone. He is just being biblical. That's exactly what the Bible said. Lord God brought her, he built her, and brought her unto the man." Unquote.
Oh my God.
So sexualizing a 16-year-old
girl. I'm sorry,
girl,
is this a human person or a cartoon character
that
I created?
The head of the Southern Baptist Convention for a time and the current head and former head of like theological seminaries. Not only is he sexualizing a girl who was no more than 16.
Which means she was definitely 14.
Right.
Because that shit gets rounded up really easy.
Yeah. He's being weird. Like, he's not just condoning the boy's action to her. He's like adding to it. And then he's defending it using the Bible. Even if that's a joke, why? Why would you say that?
It is not a joke. And you know that. Even if he said it in like with joking overtones, that is not how a joke do. Yeah. That's not how jokes work.
Yes. So
I wrote down a joke earlier. It would be really cool if I was Southern and had two sons and I could name them Mason and Dixon so that they're good Southern boys. That's a joke. It's a very good joke that I felt it was important to write down.
That's a lovely joke.
Mason,
it just
Dixon.
Says, yeah, with, I think, a cross in between.
It's a plus sign. Also, look, did you see all the flags I drew?
Are those Confederate flags or just flags?
Okay. First of all, how dare you? They're triangle flags. Mm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Is this
7,
what you
8.
Do when I talk?
No, I told you I was writing down all the red flags from the dude.
Oh, yeah.
You meant 13 red flags in that first story alone.
In addition to just being the head of these colleges and stuff.
Mason Dixon was an excellent joke. Yep.
Very good. Go back into stand-up.
It felt sarcastic, and I don't appreciate it.
Paige Patterson is actually speaking this June at the Southern Baptist Convention's like annual meeting.
Go.
Like, he's a keynote speaker there.
Let's go.
We are not going.
Where is it, though?
Dallas, maybe? Anyway, he's speaking there. They invited him to speak there. Like, they're still elevating.
Yeah, because I don't see a fucking thing wrong with what he said, Hammond.
And I think that's the bigger issue. This isn't one guy saying one or two or 90 stupid things in his life. This is a whole culture. This is the problem with the entire Southern Baptist sect. It's a problem with complementarianism, which says, like, the man is over the woman in the house. Like, they're both equal, but, like, you know, he's more equal.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Actually, can I piggyback off that?
Yeah.
That? Because actually that's a really, really nice transition into a thing I wanted to talk about, which is incel culture. Hammond, how much do you know about incels, my dude?
And now I can tell you what it means.
Wait, so, okay, before this week.
Before this week, I've heard of it because I'm on Reddit all the time.
Oh, why are you on Reddit?
I love Reddit.
I
will defend Reddit against anybody. You got to avoid the crazy parts of Reddit, but I don't follow the crazy parts of Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
I always enjoy being on there because I know what to follow.
Yeah.
I know how to read the comments. It's like, oh, that's a troll. I can ignore the troll.
Right.
So whatever, but I like it.
So incel culture is definitely something I've been aware of because I'm a human woman who goes on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So
what does that stand for then?
So it's... involuntary celibates. So it is this sort of group of men on the internets who many are virgins, many aren't having sex regularly, but and that's not what defines them. What defines them is that they are angry about it and feel like they are owed sex. So the reason that they can't go to girlfriend or whatever isn't that there is something inherently wrong with them. It is that women do not provide them with the sex they so richly deserve by virtue of having a dick. So this has been a, this has definitely been this sort of subcurrent.
So these are just people who can't get laid, forming a little group and calling themselves victims.
Yes and no, because there's a difference, I think, between like, oh, I can't get laid, like, woe is me, and what this culture has sort of transformed into, which is an anger at women for not giving them their...
richly deserved sex.
Exactly. And ways to trick women into sex, ways to rape women, like very blatant, like not even being subtle about, oh, we're, you know, like, okay, so do you know what, what is it? The mystery dating, mystery guy, he does dating. Somebody's yelling this into, pickup artist.
Oh.
Have you heard pickup artists?
I'm on Reddit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. How is this the pop culture that you're tapped into?
No
so
idea.
So pickup artists, if you haven't heard of it, it's this idea of like nagging women and like, it's just manipulating women into liking you, right? It's not being smart and charming and nice to them. It is literally like psychologically
thinking you're smart and charming.
Exactly. Or like if you say, so nagging is the big one. If you say something mean, if you're talking to a girl at a bar and you say something shitty to her, it's going to make her like you more because you've established yourself. There's peacocking involved. There was a show when I was in college called The Pickup Artist. It was called The Pickup Artist.
Okay.
Wait, did you not? Are you not aware of this?
I don't think I know that one.
Okay. Actually, when my friend Leslie, who was on the podcast, when she and her boyfriend were, we were trying to find old episodes. So it's like, you know, like the prime reality shows of like 2006, 2007. So it was a lot of dating shows. So like Shot at Love, Tequila, Tequila was on. The guy from Poison, Bret Michaels.
Yes.
Flavor Flav had a dating show. Everybody had a fucking dating show. So this one was like six or eight dorky dudes. And then this guy whose name is Mystery, who invented pickup artistry, taught these guys how to be like playas. Uh-huh. And I say that with the dripping irony.
Like every episode?
So it's like a competition show. So you start the season with your eight boys. And then they give them makeovers, and that always just involved, like, giving them a piercing and then, like, dyeing bleaching a chunk of their hair. It was...
It's like the...
Terrible television. But...
Those movies where the girl takes off her glasses and lets her hair go and, like, oh, look, makeover done.
It was She's All That.
Right.
But boys. And instead of being like, hey, you should be nice to women, it's like, hey, here's how you manipulate women into liking.
Bleach your hair. Still be a dick, but bleach your hair. And
yeah, because it's like you have to have a conversation piece. They call it peacocking helmet. I cannot believe I'm talking this much about it. I watched every episode. Now I understand how problematic it is. But it would literally be like, wear this dumb hat. And somebody will ask you about your dumb hat. And you'll be like, I got your attention. It's the fucking pits.
So wait, back to incels.
So back to incels. Basically, this is, I would say pickup artistry is sort of in that same thing of like, you don't, you're not looking for a relationship because you want the emotional reward of being in a relationship and thereby like the physical gratification as well. It is, you deserve sex and this is how you trick women into giving it to you, which is cool. Like super chill as usual, Reddit.
So wait, didn't the incel guy do some terrorist act this
okay
week?
So the reason incels are in the news right now and they're getting like really high level coverage is because in late April a man who was a self-proclaimed incel drove a truck into a crowd in Toronto. And he killed 10, or he hit a van, I think. He killed 10 people. I would argue the most famous incel, and the example I like to use is, like, the worst human of all time, TM, His name's Elliot Roger. Have you heard of him?
He was a mass shooter somewhere.
He was a mass shooter in California. He was 22 years old. He killed 6, injured 4. So I've read a little bit about him. This guy is the living well, he's not living anymore. He killed himself. Sorry, that
the
was insensitive.
Worst.
He said thing. He had a video called Second Phase, My War on Women. He said, quote, "I will punish all females for the crime of depriving me of sex. They've starved me of sex for my entire youth and gave that pleasure to other men." So he drove to the, this is from Wikipedia, sorry. So he drove to the Alpha Phi sorority house of UC Santa Barbara's campus because while he couldn't kill, quote, every single female on earth, he could, quote, attack the girls who represent everything I hate in the female gender, the hottest sorority of UCSB. So not only do they hate that women won't give them sex, they are furious that they will give it to somebody else. Like, it is just this irrational, obviously irrational anger at women for them not succeeding in every respect, specifically sexually. So in kind of on the heels of that, this obviously there's been like a ton of thought pieces about it because what is 2018 if it's not chock full of thought pieces? And there's a guy named Ross Douthat.
Douthat. Yeah, New York Times columnist who's conservative who never
he's
seems
Catholic.
To say anything that's
no productive or
yes.
good. So he wrote an article called "The Redistribution of Sex," and so he quotes this man Robin Hansen. And says, quote, "One might plausibly argue that those with much less access to sex suffer to a similar degree as those with low income and might similarly hope to gain from organizing around this identity to lobby for redistribution along this axis and to at least implicitly threaten violence if their demands are not met." So
he's lending some support to this idea that, sure, they deserve some sex.
It is the same way that Black Lives Matter works. If they don't think they're getting an equal shake in life, therefore they deserve to have their day of, like, rallying and fist pumping and saying, we deserve this because we're human and that's a human fundamental right. This didn't go super great on the internet.
I'm shocked.
I don't know how else, like, I feel like it's really obvious on its face why this is problematic. It's this idea that sex is unequally distributed.
That it's women's job to take care of these men or
something.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. So, Catherine Cross wrote a really interesting piece. She said the unequal distribution of sex is taken for granted in all these chin-stroking arguments, and it's a highly contestable claim. Being outside of beauty norms does not inherently, why can't I read today, deny you love or sex. Your place in that hierarchy instead shapes other things untethered to your actual sex life. So the point is, it's not like only traditionally attractive people have sex or relationships. Like, that's fucking dumb on its face, and it's provable by just, like, going into the universe and looking around. So I have a couple, shockingly, I have a couple thoughts on this. One is that sex is not a right, and it certainly isn't. Okay, let me actually rephrase that. I believe that sex is something that everybody deserves, but you're not owed it from a partner.
Or a specific partner.
Or a specific partner. So, like, I think masturbation is something that is fine and maybe we shouldn't be, like, actively discouraging in our kids. I think that's a fine, healthy thing. But, and so, yeah, like, that is something people inherently maybe deserve to have. Nobody fucking owes you a lay. Ever. Ever, ever, ever. And it doesn't matter who you are. More importantly, I would say this is not about sex. I think when you kind of dig, even scratching the surface of this sort of incel culture, it's not that they're mad that they're not having sex. They are, and they'll say it. They hate women. It's thinly veiled. I would argue it's not veiled at all. These are men who just trash women and their choices and everything. And it's really, like, if you just, like, tap into it a little bit, it's really gross to see. And also it denies the fact that these men aren't the only ones who can't have sex whenever they want it. Like, they're not the first virgins to ever walk the earth, which, again, virginity is a social construct, so let's get into that another time. But, like, there are women who have trouble having sex because they're not traditionally attractive, or trans women sometimes have trouble having sex because they're not, like, looped into our kind of social norm. And again, just like this thing about...
And these incels who think they're unique and alone in this thing?
Yeah. And I would argue that it tends to track down to male entitlement, because it's the same thing as pretending... When we had the walk-up thing in the light of all the school shootings, don't walk out of your school and protest, walk up to the weird kid and talk to him, and that's how... You know, being nice to people,
like,
is how
we stop...
Like,
it's your fault for not being nice to that kid.
That, and also... If bullying was the result of school shooting, or if a lack of access to sex is why incels exist, then we would see it evenly distributed among other like groups that are marginalized or bullied, like gay people or trans people or women or people of color. And the reality is, you see very few female mass shooters and very few shooters of color. Very few gay shooters, very few trans shooters.
Yeah, I'm curious what the demographic of incels would be.
By the same strength, and this is not based on any science that I did, right. But in general, these tend to be youngish men.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not the only ones not having sex in the world. So what's really at play here? What are we really talking about when these guys are mad? Because they have this whole coded thing of, like, oh, girls go after chads. Like, they are the... The Chad's is, like, code for, like, traditionally attractive dudes.
I know. I'm on Reddit.
We have a show. I'm trying to, like...
I know.
Educate people on incels. And, like, they have the nice guy thing, right? Like, oh, I'm so nice. How come she hasn't having sex with me? The friend zone of...
Yeah, we just call that being in high school. Like, get over it. It'll just...
Yeah, the friend zone fucking kills me. It really makes me mad. Like, oh, I'm so sorry I cursed you with my friendship. How hard. Oh, my God. Hemant, is it really hard to be friends with me? Because I'll never, like, we'll never have sex. I'm so sorry.
I'll deal.
You're so brave.
While we're talking about that.
I fucking hate all of this garbage. Yeah, go ahead.
Here's a transition for you. There's a high school in Michigan, Dearborn Catholic High School, and their prom is coming up next Saturday, the 12th. And so they have a dress code, which is not unusual for a public or private school for prom.
Oh, no, I saw this. I hate this. I'm so angry already.
So they had a display in the high school that basically said, there was a note attached to the display. It was a mannequin that had this, it looked like a pink bandana almost, a large pink bandana with like a V-shape thing. And they said, if your dress does not meet our formal dance requirements, no problem. We've got you covered, literally. This is our modesty poncho, which you'll be given at the door.
I'm just going to loudly pour wine.
Yeah. And so this thing, kudos to the students, whoever took pictures of this and started sharing it on social media. But so many problems with this. Whoa.
Wait, I'm sorry. Which, yeah. Can you describe the thing that you described? Triangle?
Imagine,
it's a fucking, like, shawl, dude.
Yes. Good. There you go. That's the word I was looking for. I couldn't think of it at the time.
I thought you were on Reddit. Do you not know how basic
shawls.
Clothing works?
Reddit doesn't do anything socially normal. So no, shawl, no.
It's
so,
like a fucking pashmina or a shawl or a scarf or a wrap. There's many words for this thing.
Scarf or wrap?
It's a wrap. Like, you can
is
do...
It seems like it's one of those, like... I
oh,
feel
is it
like
a literal poncho? Like, it goes... Is
over
there
your
hole?
Head. There's a hole.
Okay,
you
so
put
it's
it
a
over,
poncho.
But it's not going to cover the rest of your body. Just the top part. Basically,
the simple part.
It would cover up cleavage, and it would cover up shoulders. Mm, that's
that
really what
like
it would do.
That sounds like a challenge. I have some epic cleavage.
Well, here's the thing. Like, immodest... What's immodest? Because if you're a busty girl... If you're
skin.
Something like that, like...
See, that's a joke.
How many... Sorry, I missed it. If you're a busty girl or something, what dress are you going to have that shows zero cleavage unless you're, like, choking yourself at some point?
Yeah.
So does that not work or something? Like, it's body shaming. It's slut shaming.
Does she have to wear this shoulder condom all night?
No,
I don't
it's
know.
Fucking garbage.
As one student, I think it's a student, said, they basically body shame girls if they're bigger than a B cup.
Yep.
And the teacher whose idea this was, Mary Pat O'Malley, said her motivation was pure.
Quote, oh, she's Catholic, Mary Pat O'Malley? I know. I can't believe it.
We are trying to focus on the inner beauty and not draw attention to something
dick,
that
Mary
doesn't
Pat.
Need attention drawn to it. Because, you know, girls don't have inner beauty unless they cover themselves
how
up.
How fucking dare you? Yeah. That's such fucking trap. I hate this mutual exclusion thing of like, you can either have inner beauty or outer beauty. You don't get to have both. You get to pick one. And if you have boobs, no inner beauty for you because it's all about your tits. Like, no. It's so, okay, not only is it garbage, but it's so dangerous. It's such a dangerous thing to teach young women that because of the bodies that they occupy and move through the world in, they are inherently inappropriate. Like, if I were like a button-down shirt with the second button undone, I would like have cleavage. 10 years ago when I was much tinier, I wouldn't have. Like, that's just how human bodies work. And to act like somebody, it's so fucking dangerous because it's shit that sticks with you for the rest of your life. For the rest of your life, these girls are going to be dealing with their own body issues because they think if they present themselves a certain way, not only will they not be taken seriously, but they will deserve not to be taken seriously.
And it wasn't just an emotional or like the internal scarring sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Some girls had what they considered modest dresses.
Yeah.
By their logic anyway. And after they learned about this, they're like, well, I guess I have to return it and buy another one, which it's a financial issue now too. Yeah. And there was nothing wrong probably with their dresses. Now, like a day after this story broke, they got so much backlash as they
deserved
that the teacher, the principal rather, Eric Haley, a principal, put out this statement basically saying, to be clear, the poncho will not be passed out at prom. Good, fine. I don't know, but
we just want to make sure girls feel sufficiently uncomfortable
in
their own bodies.
Listen to some of the rest of his statement. It was on display to proactively remind students of our dress code policies and eliminate any confusion prior to the special event. So they were joking? I don't get it.
Do I need to talk about what a joke is or is not?
Well, he added one more thing.
I'm gonna
and wait till you
later.
Hear this.
Okay.
We encourage our students to tailor their outfits or provide their own wraps or shawls that would meet our requirements. If necessary, we may also provide wraps or shawls, as we have done at school functions for many years. So they are giving. They are covering up
girls.
So
when they say they're not, what they mean is we defo are.
Yeah, but maybe it won't look like this pink whatever shoulder poncho thing. It'll just be a variety of colors.
Do you want to hear the first joke I ever wrote for stand-up?
This should be good.
It's actually a good joke. I stand behind it. Stupid. I like my calories the way I like my uterus. Empty. It's a good joke.
That was good.
It's better
than
the poncho joke.
That's very true. I like that one.
Thank you. First joke I ever wrote.
Speaking of jokes, Ken Ham is in the news. And I'll tell you why.
I think somebody tweeted me about Ken Ham, and I just couldn't.
At this point, I don't even know what. It's always something different. But
it about the birds and the teeth?
Yeah. So they found Nature published an article basically saying there was a new discovery. They found a skull of an ancient bird, and the thing is, it marks this transition point between dinosaurs and modern birds because. It definitely looks like a modern bird, but it had teeth that were really sharp and stronger and a jaw that was much stronger than usual. You don't find those in modern birds. You find those in dinosaurs. So it's like, cool, this is like a transitional fossil. This is the sort of thing you dream of finding. And they've never found such an intact skull. So very cool discovery. It's 86 million years old. I'm not going to bother trying to pronounce the Latin name for it.
Do it. It'll be your joke.
Ichthyornis dispar. Sorry.
That's good.
But anyway,
probably.
It also, this is what the researcher said. It shows us what the first bird beak looked like. because it wasn't what it looks like today.
Okay.
And he added, it's a real mosaic of features, a transitional form. Another researcher not affiliated with the writers of this paper said this is a game changer. Yeah. So, okay, fine, cool. It's a transitional fossil. Scientists discover these things pretty often. Mm-hmm. And it's a big part of the evolutionary process because it allows us to fill in more blanks about the evolutionary tree. So, of course, if you're a creationist, first of all, 86-million-year-old fossil, that's impossible because there's no 86 million years ago.
I was trying to scroll through my Twitter to find who tweeted this at me. Did you say impossible while I wasn't paying attention?
That's a joke. Ken Ham is like, first of all, there's nothing that's that old. But second thing, he can't accept that because it goes against everything he believes. He doesn't think dinosaurs became birds in any sort of way, or certain ones are like predecessors, ancestors of mm-hmm. birds. So here's how he said it. His basic argument is, it's a bird. That's it. It's just a bird. Who says it's a dinosaur? It's just a bird. Here's the actual quote. So it was half bird and half dinosaur, but actually was a tiny bird with a tiny beak and maybe a powerful jaw. So obviously evolution is true because they know it evolved from a dinosaur, so it's a transitional form, but it's not because it's a bird.
Words don't mean anything because I say they don't. I can just string in words in any order I want and everybody will believe me because I put an exclamation point at the end.
He sounds like Donald Trump at the end, like sad. No, he's just like fairy tale exclamation point. It's just his version of like Christian sarcasm.
I guess my question is, why bother at this point? If you're Ken Ham and you're a young earth creationist and you've already called bullshit on all science, right? Like you don't believe in anything. Why do you take the time to call out individual discoveries? Is that worth your while?
I think it is in his defense. And the reason is for the same reason I
accidentally teed you up to defend.
No,
Ken
it's
Ham.
Okay. It's the same reason I write about Christians or religion stuff in the news all the time. If people are talking about that, I want you to see it from my perspective too.
Okay.
So if everyone's talking about this cool new scientific discovery, he wants to add his perspective. I don't begrudge him that. He's just wrong. But I think here's the thing to keep in mind. If you remember a long time ago, maybe a decade or so ago, Kirk Cameron went on Fox News and he's like, if evolution is true, then we would see like a hybrid between a crocodile and a duck. And the picture he showed
was
horribly photoshopped. Just
should
that literally
be my next tattoo is a crocodile?
Don't hurt yourself with that.
Oh, it would be so fun.
His picture was literally a half crocodile, half duck. Like,
I'm sorry, did you say it was a bad Photoshop job or the best Photoshop job? Or
I think what,
a real discovery?
I think what Ken Ham is like, he sees the pictures in the Nature article and mm-hmm. the like computer scans they did of the skull. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it looks like a bird beak because it does. The thing is, the scientists are like, yeah, but you got to look at the type of teeth this thing has and the type of jaw. And Ken Ham's like, but it looks like a bird. And
I can make up shit.
I think his mind is saying like, this should have like the head of a T-Rex and the flapping wings of a bird in order to be a legit transitional fossil.
Which is so funny because it's such a willful, willful misunderstanding of what evolution is and how it works.
As in, like, it's like a scan from the top down.
Yeah.
And you just magically morph. That's what he thinks.
I've had arguments or discussions with people about evolution and how it works and how it doesn't. And the thing that this is my former boss, whom I adored and respected, but she was a creationist, and that was a thing that we never really agreed on. We were talking about the evolution of horses. We worked with horses together. And to me, it just seemed really interesting that she understood genealogy. She bred horses. So she understood that, like, a miniature horse is the same thing as, like, a Clydesdale or a Shire or a big draft horse. Those might big horses versus small horses, haven't.
Yeah.
And they're so different and so unique, but we can acknowledge that they, like, I feel like with no context, you wouldn't look at a mini horse that's, you know, 200 pounds or whatever. They're probably more than that. And then look at like a Budweiser horse, a Clydesdale, and be like, yeah, those are definitely the same species because they are so drastically different, but they're willing, because that is something they can like tangibly understand, I guess, they're fine with that. It's for some reason the speciation aspect of it, of like, at some point they can't crossbreed because they're no longer in the same. They're like, well, no. And fucking tapped out there. But it
like, shows their ignorance completely.
But it feels willful, doesn't it?
Yeah. What I don't get is, I know Ken Ham hires people who have PhDs, a handful of them. Some of them went to actual universities, not Christian ones. Uh-huh. And like, you would think they would at least understand evolution, even if they don't buy into it. And it's clear that they don't, because they believe the same stuff.
Are you sure? Do you think they've, like, forgive the pun, but, like, sold their soul in some respect of, like, I will throw the letters after my name behind, I'll throw the weight of that behind your garbage claims in exchange for notoriety or money or whatever.
I want to believe that, but there are at least, and I'm talking about a literal handful here, who really do know what the secular world says about this stuff, what actual scientists say about this stuff, and they just totally reject it because they take this stance that Genesis is literally true, the Bible is correct, etc. And that's one issue and a separate problem and whatever. But, like, for them not to understand what scientists are actually saying about, like, these transitional fossils, that is what blows my mind.
To me, that feels like I read the headline and then commented on it. Yeah. That's very
Ken
much
Ken Ham
what
is
it
not the
to.
Scientist. Like and he'll say this too. He's not the one with that PhD or anything, but he has staffers who are. He has quote unquote research staff that helps him with blog posts and
dumb.
Stuff.
Like, he's not like cognitively a dumb person. Like he can formulate arguments,
but
he just
makes
chooses
the
to
same
use shitty things. And like, they know mules exist. It's a cross between a donkey and a horse, and they're fucking sterile. They know it's possible to cross.
God
just
made
don't
it.
Get it.
Can I move on to another one that's just, I want to make sure we get this one before it's too late.
What time?
So, like you said, it's May 4th. Tomorrow's May 5th. Tomorrow there's going to be a big rally. I'm sorry, it's not big. Tomorrow there's going to be a rally. I'll tell you about that in a second. But here's the story you need to know to make sense of this. Pulse nightclub, that massacre that happened 2 years ago.
Oh, my
ago.
God, am I going to hate this?
Hold on. Luis Javier Ruiz was at Pulse nightclub that night. He was one of the people who survived.
Oh, no. Is he the guy
he survived.
Who found religion?
Yes.
Okay.
He survived the shooting. And not only did he find God, quote unquote, during his recovery and afterwards, he now says he's no longer gay because he's been saved by God. And what's interesting is I just noticed he deleted his whole Facebook post about this, but we know what he said, and we have screenshots. Dude, what are you doing deleting these posts? But here's what he basically said. Going through old pictures of the night of Pulse, a memory, were my struggles of perversion, heavy drinking to drown out everything, and having promiscuous sex that led to HIV, blah, 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 blah,
Yikes.
Blah. I know who I am, and I'm not defined with who the enemy says I used to be, but who Christ Jesus says I am. Okay.
All right. Cool.
There was a profile written in a Catholic publication a year ago, so a year after the shooting, that basically said...
Has it been 2 years?
Yeah, it's been
Pulse
2 years.
Already?
Almost 2 years.
Fuck.
He was helped in his recovery efforts by Catholic charities. So good on them. They helped him with the recovery. But this is the same group that is fighting to make sure...
When they say recovery, do they mean recovery from the trauma or recovery from his homosexuality?
Recovering from the trauma, but I wonder if that's also what they were going for. These are the same groups that fight to stop same-sex parents from adopting kids.
Yeah, chill as usual.
So I wonder if that's the reason. But anyway, tomorrow, on Saturday, there was a thing called the Freedom March. I forgot what this is.
They can't just take all of the words.
Yeah, no, they took the words. It's sponsored by a Christian group called Voice of the Voiceless. And basically, this is a march for people who supposedly stopped being gay. They're no longer LGBT. And they're testifying publicly of the life-changing grace available to those who want to, quote, leave the LGBT identity for something greater. So, this guy, Ruiz, is speaking at that event.
All right. I guess that's right.
Yeah, he's also going to be joined by activist mommy, Elizabeth Johnson. Because anytime there's a horrible opinion to promote, she's there. Whether it's sex education, which she's opposing because it has the word education in it, and Roy Moore.
Thank you.
And Roy Moore, the alleged pedophile, she was there for a press conference defending him.
Has he moonwalked into obscurity yet?
No, he's going to run for governor, I think.
No! Uh-huh. Really?
So, yeah. So anyway, this rally is going to go on tomorrow. Now, I read a comment, so I don't know how much credence to give it, which is that this group has put on rallies before and they never get more than like a dozen people at any of these events.
It's
I don't know if it's in Virginia or somewhere close to there. I don't think it's in like Washington, D.C., but it's somewhere But I'm very curious.
I want to go to DC. Let's go to DC for a thing.
A thing.
I don't know. There's things that happen in DC.
But yeah, it.
What bothered me is I'm like, this guy saw 4 dozen people die. Because,
that's the lesson he learned.
I know one of the narratives coming out is maybe the shooter didn't even necessarily target them because they were gay, just because he wanted to commit chaos, and that was the club he found. I don't know if that's true, but whatever. I heard that story. The point is, these people died at a gay nightclub, and this guy was part of that community in whatever way, and now he's going around saying, you need to stop being gay. He's active. It's not just a personal thing. He's like, I want to stop you from being gay.
Dangerous
in some way. It's you saw people die and now you're pushing the same ideology that makes LGBTQ people kill themselves. Mm-hmm. I think what bugged me so much about this more than anything else.
Very well put. It because I think I always want to be really clear when we talk about like this kind of anti-LGBTQ movement that we see and have been seeing for centuries. It is denying people, denying Americans their basic human rights in a lot of ways. It's denying these people the rights and privileges that those of us who are straight have. But in addition to all that, it is sending a message to young queer kids all across the country that what they are and what they feel is wrong. And that is a harmful message. There are kids who aren't going to make it out of childhood because they're hearing these messages, whether that's from this guy or their own parents or their pastor or whomever. These have very real consequences. This isn't just about gay people have the right to marry, which is not to undercut that, but to continue this weird conversation about what's wrong with gay people, or gay people are less than, or whatever. It's extraordinarily and deeply dangerous.
Do you want to talk about something happier?
I guess.
White House Correspondents' Dinner, which happened after we recorded.
Okay. When I was doing my notes today, I didn't write anything about it for a minute because I was like, the White House Correspondents' Dinner was like 4 months ago.
Yeah.
I cannot believe how recent it was.
Right. Not even a week.
Oh, my Christ.
I wanted to bring up one thing about it that I laughed at today, maybe yesterday or something, but basically...
Took you a second to get Michelle Wolf's jokes.
One of the things... I mean, I know all the attention has been about the things Michelle Wolf said about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, but she also made a few jokes at Mike Pence's expense, and the one that got the most attention is Mike Pence is very anti-choice. He thinks abortion is murder, which, first of all, don't knock it till you try it, and when you do try it, really knock it. You know, you got to get that baby out of there. She said some other things, pretty too, funny. About him, but okay, fine. So, we know Sarah Huckabee Sanders because she was on camera that night. She didn't even crack a smile. She didn't find anything funny because she doesn't smile.
I will say her contouring was on point. Her cheekbones looked great.
Sorry.
But we don't know. It's true, though.
But what we don't know is, like, well, how did Mike Pence react to any of this?
And he wasn't there.
Right, he wasn't there. So he, on the National Day of Prayer, on Thursday, he did an interview, surprise, surprise, with the Christian Broadcasting Network, because I think they do more interviews with Trump and Pence than any, even Fox News, because they're even...
You know, Trump hasn't done a press conference in over a year.
Mm-hmm. They are even more softball than Fox News. So Pence did an interview with David Brody of the Christian Broadcasting Network, and Brody asked him that question. Like, here's his question. Wolf said about how you believe abortion is murder. I mean, it was not only untrue, but over the top.
What?
Yeah. How is that untrue? He does think that's the whole point of the pro-life movement, is that abortion is murder. Right? Maybe you don't punish the women. I'm sorry. Sure that...
I might have zoned out for a second, yeah, because it sounded to me like a Christian just said the fact that quote unquote abortion is murder is untrue on its face.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I'm quoting.
I haven't had that much wine to drink, but transcript. I feel like I've...
Wolf said about how you believe abortion is murder. I mean, it was not only untrue, but over the top. He didn't even say the joke was over the top. He said that comment was over the top and untrue.
We're in the upside down.
I thought it was like, oh, it's like a Holocaust. It's another genocide. Like, they think abortion is murder. That's okay, whatever.
that's not even the point of this. The point is Pence's response, ultimately, is with regards to the critics, David, you know, it. I'll give him this.
Regards isn't a word. It's regard. Yep. Yeah.
I will. He said regard. Sorry, I misread it. My fault.
You mean because you response, had to get you. I'm sorry.
His response was actually like, oh, yeah, that's how presidents usually sound. Like, his response was in general, you know, it's I deal with the critics. They're going to be there. I support their right to say this stuff. I disagree. That's what you kind of expect someone to say in his position. Remember when he saw Hamilton and, like, the actors said the statement at, like,
yeah,
whatever. And his response later, he sat there, he took it, and then he walked out of the theater. And his response was something like, they have a right to whatever.
Yeah.
He gave a pretty normal
statement.
All
things considered, he handled that well. Did you know that the actor who said that was the same guy who played Judas in Jesus Christ Superstar?
Really?
Same guy. Go ahead.
Nice.
That
wasn't the point of this story either. Mike Pence, here's what Mike Pence said. With regard to the critics, David, you know, it comes with the territory, you know? As the Bible says, I count it all joy when I endure trials or criticisms.
Brother.
All right, whatever. But, okay, basically, it doesn't matter if you're saying good or bad things about me, if you're my critic, like, it's all good. You're living life, be happy, fine. Okay, fine. I had to look that one up for a second, and it turns out that comes from James chapter 1, verse 2.
There's a book of James?
There's a book of James. And then I was reading more of the book of James, and guess what it says a little later in James chapter 1?
He tricked verses, you into reading the Bible.
Verses 10 and 11. Like,
and this was
a
verse...
few sentences later.
Okay.
Here's what it says. The rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wildflower. The rich will fade away even while they go about their business.
That is fresh.
Maybe
as hell,
Mike
Bible.
Pence hasn't had read the Bible. Who knows?
Oh my God.
I found that amusing.
That's amazing. I mean, God, I mean, how many times can we talk about the hypocrisy of Christians when they don't follow the Bible? It's bonkers crazy. Speaking of abortion.
Yes.
Were you done with your thing?
Yes.
Okay.
It's
so
the transition.
So him and before we start recording the show, we just like do a rundown of like the subjects that we're gonna do, so he can do show notes. And I was like, I have two really quick things. Oh, actually, I'm gonna come back to the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah.
But one of the things I put was. So I just have my notes in front of me. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed the most one of the most restrictive abortion bills in the country. Bans it at 6 weeks, and then I just put, fuck it. Usually I do, like, a long, drawn-out, like, explainer of what's going on. I just can't even. 6 weeks is so draconian, I can't even stand it.
Some women don't even know they're pregnant at that
Many
point.
Many women
which is,
don't even know, especially when they're not expected to be pregnant.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I read about the story here, why would a woman governor, you know, sign anything like this? And there's a reason for this. It's not just anti-abortion state run by Republicans, whatever. Part of the reason is they know this is going to be challenged because, of course, it's going to be like they're going to get sued for this. And they know that. And they want
this to go to the Supreme Court.
They want this to go to the Supreme Court because this stuff takes some time. And if you say, yeah, it may take 2 years for it to get to the Supreme Court, who knows what the court will look like then if something happens to RBG. And Trump appoints someone else. I'm just saying, this is their.
Why would you call her out?
This
how
is,
dare you?
This is their argument, saying like, well, we'll take our chances, and maybe Trump will get to appoint another Supreme Court appointment. And because some people were pissed off that Hillary used email, this is why this is even a question now. So it's not just a draconian abortion policy that's going to hurt women. It's not. It's incidental, almost. It's part of a long-term strategy
to
try to overturn Roe v. Wade. Yeah.
Can we just have a super quick sidebar about the fact that Trump's doctor released a garbage statement about his health in 2016? So I just really want to like drive this home. And this is less about how I'm pro-Hillary, which I am, and more about how like the double standards those two humans were held to. So this was around the time when, do you remember the 9/11 memorial that Hillary had pneumonia and like almost passed out and had to be brought back to her car? And the headline was, Hillary is on her deathbed. She's dying. She can't be president. How could she? We had all of her health records. We had all of her, like, tax shit. We've seen every email she's ever written. And then at the time, Trump's doctor released the kind of medical assessment that Hemant's 3-year-old daughter would have written. Like, healthiest ever! Superman! He's an Ubermensch!
Yeah.
And shockingly... Daddy just came walking up because I yelled so much.
Yeah.
Shockingly, it just came to pass that Trump dictated that to his doctor. And everyone's like, oh, interesting. Oh, that's right. That's an interesting turn of events.
Between that guy who said Trump dictated it to Ronny Jackson, who told us that, like, he's the healthiest guy
what
alive.
What the fuck was with Ronny Jackson, though?
Yeah, I don't know, because he was working for other presidents, too. So, like, but now I don't trust him either. Trump ever had an actual medical exam? I don't know that he has.
No, certainly not. But you know who Trump's old doctor looks like? Have you seen Independence Day? God, tell me you've seen it.
Oh, a long time ago.
Okay, there's a scene when they're in Area 51, and there's a doctor, and he's also the guy who plays, I want to say, Data on Star Trek,
Okay.
Mikey just went upstairs, he would have known. But he looks like him. He's got, like, this scraggly gray hair and has kind of, like, a hippie doctor vibe. Anyway, so back to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. What I want to briefly touch on is the sort of reaction to the quote-unquote criticism of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, which here's what I think is interesting. I think there is an argument to be made that Michelle Wolf did sort of make fun of her based on her looks, but it wasn't the smoky eye thing that everybody's obsessed with. So she did a bit about how, like, Sanders is kind of the like, softball coach of whatever, which is... First of all, not untrue. Second of all, like, too true for me. Like, that kind of struck home. Here's what I was troubled by. There's a lot of... there's the hypocrisy of the right of, oh, now you're worried about, like, linguistic standards and people be... Like, when you're president, the person you stand behind is calling people names every fucking day. Like... This is where you're choosing to, like, draw the line in the sand. Like, you need to be decent here at the correspondence dinner that I've never been to.
Right.
That's one thing. I think it's fine if you want to have a conversation about decency. They talked about this on Pod Save America, and I thought it was well put that we can have a conversation about decency, but it has to start at the White House. Like, you can't be mad that a comedian is telling jokes at a dinner when... The guy who's running the country is as vulgar as anybody else. I would argue as vulgar as I am. But here's what actually sort of bummed me out is a lot of women came to, quote unquote, the defense of Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah, and media women.
Yeah. Mika Brzezinski was one of them, whom I respect. I like Mika a lot. But it really irked me that they talked, there was at least one quote was like, how could a wife and mother sit there while her looks are being judged? And that fucking sucks because part of feminism is that women aren't inherently weaker than men. And instead of labeling Sarah Huckabee Sanders as what she is, which is a professional working woman who is representing a White House who is constantly lying on behalf of her boss, but to sort of like reduce her debt, not reduce, that's not the right word, but frame it as, oh, this working wife and mother was getting attacked. And that's garbage. Like, nobody would ever say, like, oh, husband and father Mike Pence was attacked for his, like, dumb Lego hair. Like, nobody would reduce it to that. And I think that sucked. And I really hated to hear that. And that's what I have to say about that. So now I got those two guys out. I only have one more thing.
Go for
in the
it.
Listener mail.
Oh. Oh. Do I have anything else?
You've got things. You're just going to skip them.
I got things. I don't know that they're
worth... Let's do, like, lightning round.
Lightning round. Okay. Let's talk about this House chaplain. He resigned, and part of me was like, good. Because he told an atheist he couldn't deliver an invocation. But then he said, you know, we didn't know why he was resigning.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came out that he gave an invocation where he quite subtly kind of dissed the Republicans for their tax plan for not helping.
Subtly is generous.
Maybe. Okay.
He, It was when they were trying to pass their tax plan, right. And he basically did this whole thing about, like, let the poor not be fucked by this.
Right.
I would, if unquote. I had to.
And there was another one saying, like, well, he once allowed a Muslim to deliver a guest invocation.
Sure.
But whatever. We don't really know why, but he rescinded it. And then it came out that, like, Paul Ryan kind of pressured him out.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's like, I rescind my invocation. If you want to fire me, do it, Paul Ryan.
I'm sorry, rescind his...
rescind his resignation.
Okay.
He's like, you know what? I take it back. If you want to fire me, Paul Ryan,
really?
Fire me. But I'm not leaving on my own.
That's dope as hell.
Making the House Republican, you know, the House Speaker...
What do they do?
Fire the chaplain.
What do they do?
Paul Ryan's like... All right, you can keep your job.
Really?
Yeah.
And so it's over?
It's over. Right now, the chaplain's still there now.
Interesting.
So Paul Ryan's like, not picking this fight.
Wait, you mean Paul Ryan was spineless about a thing?
I know,
not
shocking.
Not my Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. Lightning round.
Liberty University.
Oh, Christ. If you're going to talk to me about their gun range again.
I'm not talking about the gun range. Do we talk about how they're the largest Christian school in the country?
No, but okay.
Okay, they're Jack Jenkins.
Wait, really?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. I think this happened right as we recorded last week.
Even, like, compared to, like, Notre Dame,
no.
Which is, like, tech... Okay.
When it comes to Protestant... Actually, maybe compared to Notre Dame.
Really?
Yeah, because Notre Dame's not huge necessarily.
But... Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I just live in the Midwest and hate
when it
Notre
comes
Dame.
To the largest Christian school in the country, Liberty University says everywhere, we are the largest Christian university in the country. Last Friday... Jack Jenkins of Religion News Service put out a piece that basically said, no, you're not. Not anymore.
Really?
Because what Jack was saying is that...
Phoenix College Online overtook him.
Close. He said Grand Canyon University, which is based in Phoenix, which is a for-profit Christian school, is actually the largest. And here's what Jack found.
I've never heard of it.
This is according to a government database called the Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System.
Okay.
Basically, they said they reported Liberty's 12-month unduplicated headcount. These are all the students we have over the past year. They said for Liberty, it was 109,000 plus. They also said for Grand Canyon University, it was 111,000 plus. And this is including online students, obviously.
Yeah.
So the thing is...
How have I never heard of this one?
Because it's online and it's private and it's a Christian school. So it's like, why would you have heard of it?
Another demographic.
Yeah. And so here's the thing. Liberty's not the biggest. It's as simple as that. You're the second biggest. So Jack pointed this out, and he reaches them because if
Die
they're
mad
saying,
about it, Liberty University.
Yeah, if you're saying you're the largest Christian university, well, you're not anymore, so what are you going to do about that?
Fight.
And they said, I think at the time, well, we're going to change the website then. We'll make sure we remove that line from our advertising,
of the biggest,
whatever.
Yeah.
But after like a day or two after that report went out, they started pushing back. They're like, you know what? We are the largest Christian university.
Really?
And I'm paraphrasing. It's like, because we're true Christians. Yeah. For example, they said.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Because, for example, Liberty University forces students and faculty members to sign a statement of faith that says, like, you have to believe in a literal Book of
Just
Genesis
any
interpretation.
Just any schmo can get on your garbage university
right.
board.
Yeah, they're like, they force,
really?
Liberty says you have to be a young earth creationist. Grand Canyon University is like, well, you have to believe God created us, but the mechanism of that is up to you. Young earth creationism... God-guided evolution, which a lot of progressive Christians believe. Like, they don't care.
Yeah.
So Jerry Falwell Jr. is like, well, then they don't count.
Cool.
That also means, by the way, like, if his Christianity is true Christianity, like Catholic schools, progressive Christian schools, none of these count because
well,
they're all heretics.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like the schools that are, like, incidentally Christian. So, like, in Chicago, DePaul.
Right, that's a Catholic.
Loyola.
Forgot the specific, yeah. Jesuit, whatever.
Yeah, like they're quote-unquote religious schools, but not in any meaningful way, I'd
Well,
argue.
They're not, they're liberal with their policies. Like, I did grad school at DePaul. I never once had to do anything religious of any sort.
Right.
Right? Like, I just got my degree.
But technically,
it's a religious private school. I mean, it is.
And Liberty University is bigger than...
Online. We talked about this before, that their online,
online
thing is,
yeah,
like,
right,
bigger than
right,
anything.
Right,
it funds
you're right,
you're their...
Their gun range.
Their actual physical campus is funded by the online
okay.
stuff. So Jerry Falwell also said, we have more full-time students than Grand Canyon University.
God, just which measure is, your dicks and which, get over yeah, it.
Which is fine, but it's also irrelevant for the one metric that right. the government actually keeps. So then finally he's like trying to compromise. Jerry, this is Jerry Falwell Jr. If GCU requires faculty to affirm a strong Christian doctrinal statement, which, you know, he doesn't believe, and enrolls more students in total headcount, while Liberty enrolls more full-time enrollment, blah, 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 then it would be fair for both schools to claim to be the largest Christian university in the world. In any event, he said, Liberty will remain the largest nonprofit Christian university in the world. Which is true, because they're for-profit, but
when
like...
When you're a jet all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day.
I have no idea where that one's from.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you...
Not even... I have no idea.
West Side Story, my dude.
No,
you've never seen West Side Story?
I've heard of it.
It's very good. It's honestly
I've heard a couple of the songs.
Well, yeah, because they're fucking great songs, Hemet, and you're an American. We should watch...
Thank
you. Should watch... Even though
you're adding to the queue after Star Wars here.
nice. I'm not saying we for the podcast, just in your life.
Yes.
West Side Story is very, 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 very good. And if you need somebody to say all the words to all the lines and all the songs in your face while you're watching it, I can watch it with you.
Excellent. After Star Wars, let's talk.
I can't believe you never... West Side Story is very, very good.
Let's talk about lightning round one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm done.
God, we're bad at lightning round.
There was a poll that came out this week, and it's by a group called the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. And basically, I don't know if this is a group run... I think it is a group run by Muslims. But they wanted to measure what they call the Islamophobia Index, which... I know a lot of atheists, including myself, have a problem with that word. Because, like,
Islamophobia?
Yeah, because I'm fine with a criticism of Islam as a religion, because atheists frequently criticize religion, and that includes Islam. That's very different from, like, anti-Muslim bigotry, which and many people are totally opposed to. Fine. And I think a lot of people conflate the
and
two. Like,
yeah, I was just about to say, your problem's that they're conflated?
Yeah.
Okay.
People are like, oh, you said, like, Islam isn't true, you're Islamophobic. Like, no, I have no problem with Muslims. I have a problem with the religion. Same with Christians, whatever. Anyway, they called it the Islamophobia Index. They wanted to see which groups, religious demographic groups, like, how do they treat Muslims? And here's what I found really interesting. When it comes to saying, you know, who's likely to oppose Donald Trump's Muslim ban?
Okay.
Naturally, Muslims ranked pretty high on the list.
Really?
They were at 84%. They opposed the Muslim ban.
I'm sorry.
Surprise.
What is going on with that 16%?
I know. What's the other 16%? Self-hating or something. 85%? The non-affiliated group. The nuns. White evangelicals, 34%. Like, only a third of them oppose it. When it comes to who least likely to approve of Donald Trump, only 13% of Muslims approve of Donald Trump.
Wait, so there is...
Seriously, the same group, self-hating.
But there's 3% of people who are like, I'm fine with a Muslim ban. I hate Trump, though. Like, what is your life, dude? 3%, that's a lot of people.
But the weird thing is, okay, you would expect Muslims to be the lowest in terms of approval.
They're not?
Well, they are, but 17% unaffiliateds again. Go up. We were second lowest.
And it's, nailing, yes.
White evangelicals, 72% support Trump. So, I mean... The distance is huge here. Mm-hmm. And one more example of it, when it comes to the actual Islamophobia, like they did a separate calculation for this, do you agree with the statement? This is what they asked. Most Muslims living in the United States are more prone to violence.
Yikes. That's
18% of Muslims agreed with that. Same, whatever. Only,
do you think it's white people? Like, yeah, my name's Muhammad.
I don't know how they...
Death to America?
I don't remember how they conducted it, but 8% non-affiliated. We scored lower, like, in a good way.
What the fuck?
On that.
Muslims do better.
Most Muslims living in the United States are less civilized than other people.
Wow, that's a loaded term. Yeah.
8% of Muslims said yes. Only 1% of nuns.
I'm sorry. Just really quick, is the margin of error on this 12 points? Like, what the fuck is happening?
I don't know the margin, but yeah, weird, right? And here's the last question worth bringing up. Who supports censorship of the press in the wake of a terror attack? Jewish people came in at 19%, only 19%. Nuns?
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah.
If there's a terrorist attack, uh-huh. we should...
I
think when it comes
which
to...
Which group supports a... Okay, got it.
I think,
I'm sorry.
And censoring how you talk
question.
About them, maybe.
Okay.
Atheists, the agnostics, the religious, but I believe in something, whatever. Only 11%, lowest in the bunch. The point being, and one of the things I want to point out with all this...
These non-religious people sound like a group I want to be affiliated with.
There's... We've talked about this before. The question is, how many... Are nuns veering toward the alt-right? You know, are we...
We did talk about that.
Islamophobic? Are we anti-Muslims? Whatever.
This According to this... study...
This particular study says, no, we're on the right side
how
as much as...
How big is the study? Do you know how many...
Off the top of my head, I don't.
Okay.
We'll have the link.
I'm
you can look
if they
it
talked
up.
To like eight people.
I think it's a legit survey, which means they would have talked to as many people, the right number of people or whatever. But the point is like, this is just one study, I know, but this contradicts to me that narrative that we're all like, yeah, there are always going to be a handful of people who are, you're just like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like you just mentioned. But by and large, this is not some trend where the nuns are the ones we got to worry about when it comes to the alt-right. Okay, right. I'm done with my lightning round.
The last thing, Matt Walsh, who is a conservative blogger who is much derided on this podcast, and I always want to be clear, Matt Walsh is the conservative blogger, not the comedian who went to my same high school. We're going to be friends someday. I'm going to make it
what
happen.
What did Matt Walsh do?
Matt Walsh... is the worst as usual. So he tweeted. So this is all. I want to give the correct context for this. And so he tweeted this out. Oh, I guess I don't have the date, or I've been scribbling over it. Oh no, May 3rd. So yesterday.
Yeah.
As we record this. So this is in the context of this incel thing happening, which is genuinely men who are a danger to women, who are lashing out at women, blaming them for their problems. So what he's saying is kind of garbage anyway. In the context, it's really shitty. This tweet from Matt Walsh, at 6:05 a.m., May 3rd, buddy, sleep in. Maybe you won't maybe you won't tweet cranky things. The lack of male spaces in our culture, it begins in the home, where a man is often forced to set up his, quote, man cave in the garage or the basement if he wants any space to himself in the home he owns and pays for. Next tweet, it's sad to think of the man who hangs out all day in the garage and then is often banished to the couch at night if his wife is angry at him. He allows himself to be treated like a dog in his home. In his own home. Okay, so I'm just going to go
there's
through.
There's insight into his life.
So this is, what, probably 100 words. So lack of male space in our culture begins at home, where a man is forced to set up his man cave. So this begs the question. So the implication here is that your entire home is the woman's space.
Right.
And you, as a man, only get your one little, like, piece of the pie.
As someone with two kids, I have no cave.
And does your wife have a cave? Like, is your wife... I live here with my husband. We don't have any, like, human children, but I would argue the whole house is my dog's cave.
Right.
And Mikey and I have the privilege of occupying the same space as her. But, so that's a really fucked up thing, is... because this is a man... And this very much does not... exist on the other end of the gender spectrum. Women,
like, there's no woman cave even.
They
concept.
Have she sheds, which I'm not going to talk about because I'm like personally offended by it. But like, I don't know, some women have like their craft rooms. My craft room is, again, wherever I am is where I craft. But so it's this idea that like men need their own personal space and their domain isn't anywhere in the house. I feel like he's like subtweeting the fact that the woman's space is in the kitchen. He didn't say that.
Right,
I'm putting those
words
in his mouth, but I don't think they're far behind. So that's one thing. The other thing is, if he wants any space to himself, like if you're a human person who lives with other human people, like space to yourself is a fucking premium. So the fact that like, if you had a quote unquote man cave, like that isn't your fucking right. That is, like, if you had a space in your house that your kids weren't allowed into, like, that's not like your fundamental right as a man. It's like you lucky motherfucker.
Yeah. And who has time? What am I going to do in my man cave? That suggests I have time to hang out there.
People watch TV and like movies.
Movies.
You've heard of movies. And here's my favorite last part of this. And then we're still talking about the first piece. In the home he owns and pays for.
Right, right. No woman could ever pay mortgage or help with that.
Yeah, like grosseroo. Do I need to go into why that's gross? I do not think so. It's sad to think of the man who hangs out all day in the garage. Okay, so I'm going to underline
just
that.
Just fix your car. You don't need to spend all day.
But okay, but here's the thing.
What are you
so
doing?
It's sad to think the man who hangs out all day. So we're going to give the benefit of the doubt that this is a weekend and not like a Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
But so the implication is, and given the context, Matt Walsh, I think, has like a couple, he has a small brood of human children. So the idea is like his idea of being a man is ignoring his family, spending all day in the garage, like wrenching metal things and watching Home Improvement. Is that what men do?
Clearly, I wouldn't know.
I laughed too loud in the mic. Like, A, this is like what he thinks the ideal like man day is. And B, like, poor him. He gets an entire day of alone time while presumably his wife or whomever he pays to raise his children for him, because he can't be fucking bothered to look at them because that's women's space. It's just everything about this makes me so
And then
angry.
He wants to go to his man cave separately from that.
Yeah, that's not his man. And then is often banished to the couch at night if his wife is angry with him, which A, often... My dude, if you're quote-unquote often banished to the couch, maybe take a look in a mirror or talk to a therapist. B, the only time Mikey sleeps not in our bed is if I'm snoring particularly loud. And I just, maybe this is just a thing I can't relate to. I don't know if Mikey and I have ever had a big enough fight that we're like, sleeps. That's neither here nor there. He allows himself to be treated like a dog in his own home. Like, first of all, my dog sleeps in our bed every night. So, again, this is falling down right and left. But
you
it's
know
just
what?
Such
it,
a...
We started this podcast talking about Paige Patterson, the Southern Baptist guy. And, like, Matt Walsh is not... I don't know if he's Southern Baptist or evangelical or whatever. But it's the same mindset. It's
100%. This... He's the owner. He's the domain. He's the king of the castle. And everything is done for him. It's...
But don't worry, men and women are equal in their point of view.
But I think it's, you know when you're with your spouse or whatever and you have a really shitty day and you're like, I just want to go home and I want my spouse to take care of it. Like, I'll come home and be like, I am not touching the kitchen. I'm not making dinner. Like, you have to take care of
this. Oh, it happens all the time. And it happens with both of us. It's like, you take care
of
the kids. I'm relaxing because I'm tired.
Like, this was a garbage.
Yeah.
But I think when you and I do that, presumably we do it with a mindset of like, I had a particularly shitty day. Like, I need this one for today. Either you can cook dinner, or we can order like Domino's, which I'm never mad about.
Right.
The other on Tuesday, Mikey was like, do you want to get Hooters for dinner? I was like, yes, that's all I want every day for the rest
of my
life. You're
the only person I've ever heard to say that.
Have I not talked to you about my love affair with Hooters?
No.
Okay. Super quick, we've gone to Hooters. In my family, we've gone to Hooters every Mother's Day that I can remember. My grandfather in Florida lived near the original Hooters in Fort Lauderdale. That's where Spring Breakers are. New Smyrna is where he lived. I don't know if that's where the original one. But we used to go all the time. My family has a very real love of Hooters. Oh, Daddy. Yeah? I think she just saw your cart and she's suspicious of it. I love Hooters. It's my favorite. I don't understand
you non-vegetarian people.
But you don't eat meat. Okay. Yes, it is problematic writ large, but those wings, though, and I tip very well, and I'm very nice to my server.
So, yes, Matt Walsh is.
So, Matt Walsh is a nightmare person. Yeah, right. I don't know. I think I got a little sidetracked, damn it.
So
it's unlike me.
So, we got mail.
We got mail.
Nice.
That didn't go very far.
That was a page throw mic drop.
Okay, so I have an email from Terry. Justin Hammett, thank you so much for the show. I listen on my... I'm going to start to read the nice things about us. I sometimes skip them, but a lot of people say mean things to me, so I'm going to read the nice things. Justin Hammett, thanks so much for the show. I listen on my way to work, and I'm always super excited to work on Saturdays because I know a new show will be up. Are we going to get this up?
Sure.
I have some quotes.
You better hope the kids are in bed when I get home.
Have we been recording for 4.5 hours?
Something like that.
I have some advice, Nadine, that I would love to hear your thoughts on. How do you respond when people say, God bless you? As an RN, registered nurse, I know things. I hear it on a fairly regular basis from thankful patients. This feels like a humble brag, Terry. In this case, I just say you're welcome and carry on and try to keep religion and politics out of my nurse-patient relationship, unless the patient brings them up, and then I'm like, well, yes, sir, I do have some thoughts about that Fox News you're watching. But that's a whole other rant. My wife and I hear the phrase quite often when we give money to homeless people we encounter and are rewarded with a, quote, God bless you. I recently started thinking that we shouldn't just let it go. I don't want to give the impression that I'm helping people so that God would reward me. I want people to see that atheists aren't bad people and that atheists, non-theists, so on and so forth, do good things too. The more I think about it, the more pissed I get. I'm realizing that I've been letting Christians take the credit for my benevolence. I'm trying to be bolder in calling people out when I hear sexist, racist, religious, homophobic bullshit. So how can I say that their God can keep his blessings, thank you very much, without sounding like an angry atheist? Thanks for your thoughts and have a blessed fucking day, Terry. Terry, you're all time. You're great.
I mean, I'll answer with, first of all, there's always, you could joke back like, you know, God bless, I'm getting better in the hospital or something. Yeah, you could thank the doctors too, whatever. Honestly, this isn't one of the things that I get worked up about much. Like, it's all context for me.
Yes, but I will say this. When I do agree, like, I would, personally, me, I would never say something if somebody said, God bless you, I would kind of roll with the punches. But I do, but you and I both also have platforms that we are doing a lot of work to promote the idea that atheists aren't monsters. Like, sure. we are very lucky that we have this platform.
So that one we can let slide because we have other places to talk about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So I certainly, if somebody says, that's the thing.
I wonder if I would give a different answer to Terry if it wasn't in the context of work in a hospital.
But what about he or she? I actually don't know.
I think he said is, I don't know. It's all good. Terry, registered
nurse,
though.
But just like walking down the sidewalk and giving money to homeless people.
If they said, God bless you, like.
But I also understand their desire to be like, it's the same way of like, if I do volunteer work, a lot of times I'm like tempted to wear an atheist shirt of some kind, just to be not necessarily for my edification or for any specific reason besides like, it is good press for like, so the example I would give is when I was in Memphis at the American Atheist Convention in 2015, at the end they said, so we had our like convention atheist t-shirts, and at the end of like the Saturday night, they said, put on your shirts, go out in Memphis and tip well. Like, and I completely agree with that. Like, if I want to be a good representative.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was a fucking, it was so much fun. But I drank a bucket of a drink at some point. I don't know what happened there. Anyway, I wonder
if it makes it, like, to me, the homeless guy who's saying, God bless you for giving me money or something, they're not trying to pick a debate with you. They're just reacting in a way that most people would be fine with.
Yes.
So, like, that guy's not looking for a debate or an argument. So, I don't really think they're even talking about God so much as saying bless you when someone sneezes.
You. Yeah.
It's just like, it's just the knee-jerk reaction. I don't know if
can't you be under... aren't you understanding a little bit of, like,
I get where Terry's coming from.
I am a nurse. I work my fucking ass off for 12-hour shifts. And
I remember we had
in my
1 year of failed medical school. It wasn't failed. I left on purpose. But
you
in the 1 year
held high.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to medical school actually?
Nowhere important now. No, I went to UIC. It was good. It was fine. I just didn't like med school. The point being, we had all these discussions, like, what do you do if a patient wants to pray? And
really?
What
in
do
your
you do
first
if
year
you...
medical school you had
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a lot of what you do. It's a lot of hypotheticals, a lot of discussions. And what do you do if a patient wants to pray, but it's not your religion? And I think, you know, usually when you hear about those
discussions or whatever, the consensus is like, whatever, just make the patient feel better. They're not asking you to do anything other than like hold their hand while they pray, whatever.
They pray over you.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is like...
So if someone says, God bless you, it's like, hey, if it makes you feel better, whatever. And at some point, if they actually want to have a discussion, like, look, if I'm in the hospital and like a chaplain came by,
this isn't the time I want to,
I don't want to hear your, yeah, don't, no, this isn't about you. Sorry. No. And I get where Terry's coming from, but like, if I was saying as a registered nurse, that's different than you in regular life with, you know, people like,
so is there something that Terry could do? So the problem is with atheism is that like I can symbolize that I'm a Christian pretty easily by wearing a cross, right? Like that is, so I would say that maybe a passive thing that Terry could do is some sort of non-religious, what, I guess we have the A, we don't,
no,
we're
one
not
knows.
We're not great at branding.
No.
We as a people, I mean, I guess I have my Darwin tattoo, so whenever people ask me about that, like, I get into that. Not that, like, that's the same thing, but, like, is there something they could do that would...
I think if they ask, like, will you pray with me? I think it makes sense to say, well, I'm not religious, but if you want me to be with you while you pray...
Hold your hands and sweat on you.
I don't see that as a problem. Because... That's letting them know where you stand on this stuff.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think you and I have both been at plenty of dinners where, like, everybody holds hands and prays, which... To me, especially if you're at a wedding, like, that's the best time to find other non-believers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really...
Look around.
Oh,
have
my...
some fun.
Have I told you about the story that I was at a wedding of a family friend? It's a family I grew up with, mother and parents and kids. The kids were a little bit older than me. And then, God, 10 years ago now, the mother died of cancer. It was very, very tragic. And within a year... The man was remarried. So the first time I saw these kids who I grew up with after their mom died was at their dad's wedding to his new wife, because he didn't want to have sex outside marriage. He's very brave. But the new wife was like, whatever her son's name was, John. Yeah, John, he's so handsome and he's so nice. He just can't find a nice girl. And I met John. I'm like, hi, John, you're a gay man. But the best part of, like, it was just one of those, like, I met him, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I understand what's happening. Bless her heart for being like, you just can't find the right girl. But the best part was everybody was praying in this wedding reception. And then I when I'm called to pray, I generally just, like, sit there quietly. I usually don't put my, like, look down or whatever. And I happened to make eye contact with this John guy, and he gave me the most excellent eye roll I've ever seen in my entire life. And to this day, like, I'm grateful for his existence. Anyway, I don't know. God, I don't know. Terry, I wish... I actually don't know why we solicit questions as if we know anything. But it's tricky. I think it's a tricky and interesting question, because I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to be like, hey, I'm an atheist and I do good because I do good.
Yeah.
The same way people wear crosses, it's all performative, right? Like, it's, people don't wear crosses because it reminds them of Jesus. They wear crosses to be, I mean, maybe they do, whatever, but like, it
to
is,
show I'm a Christian, I'm proud of it.
It's
whatever.
Performative, which is fine. The same reason I have like a Darwin tattoo, like, it's all performative. But unfortunately, we don't have like a universal symbol for atheism, and it,
swear
I don't
the
know
devil
if there's
horns
a,
when you walk into the rooms.
I just don't. I cannot think of a way that it wouldn't sound standoffish.
Yeah.
If you're like...
I mean, if I'm the patient and someone did it and they were of a different religion, it's like, I don't want to hear it from you.
I don't, yeah.
I would feel the
it
same.
It is for the, it's
I'm
for the
sure,
patient or the patient's loved one.
Yeah, and I'm sure if... Believe me, and I understand where Terry's coming from. I understand the frustration with the giving God credit when God did nothing.
I cannot be more sympathetic to like this sort of...
So at work, I'm like, don't pick that unless the opening is there and they want to talk about it or something.
Yeah.
In your real life, if someone says it, I think responding back like, well, I would thank the right people.
Do you have a... story, I'm obviously teeing this up because I have a story, but do you have any particular stories of like somebody saying something very overtly religious to you and you're like deer in headlights about it? Because I definitely have one.
It's probably been a while, so I can't remember anything off the top
of my
head.
So the one I have, when I was in college, when I taught horseback riding lessons, And one of my students was homeschooled. Was she homeschooled or she went to a private Christian school? Something like that. And I only had maybe half a dozen students, so I was really, really close with students, with their parents. I had a great relationship with everybody, except for this one girl who I made cry every week. That's another story.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I was talking about actually that I was moving to Montana and that was my next step. And I was just like, I'm not sure. At some point I said, I just am not sure if I could make a, cause at that point I was working with horses professionally. And I said, I don't know if I could ever like work with horses for a living. I don't even know if that would be possible. And she just looked me fucking deadlocked in the eyes and said, through Jesus, all things are possible, or through Christ, all things are possible. Oh, and my response was, well, yeah.
What else are you going to say?
Anyway, Hemant, any good things happening this week?
I'm going to a Cubs game next week. That'll be fine.
Are you?
I'm getting out of the house for one day.
That's nice. Who are you going with?
Some high school friends. That'll
fun. Be fun. Yeah. Good seats?
You
have no idea.
I think they are. I think he stole season ticket from someone for a game.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
It'll be fun.
Cool. I live in the suburbs now, but most of my friends live in the city. And so yesterday I was in the city for this, cause I work for a nonprofit organization now. So they sent me to this full day seminar of like Association 101, just about what it means to work for a nonprofit. So anyway, after work I met, a couple buddies of mine for drinks, one of whom was Eric, who's been on this podcast. I would recommend going back to listen to it because he's one of my favorite human beings of all time, and he grew up in a cult. Grew up in Church of God, maybe? I don't know. But it's a really, really crazy story. I'd go back and look into it. And it was so fun and wonderful, and like it's just great to reconnect with my friends. Also, yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of me graduating college.
Hey, look at you.
I know, and I've made so much of myself.
All college graduates hope to have a podcast one day.
Oh, I'm also almost at 1,000 Twitter followers. And
look at you.
And I keep bragging to Mikey, and he does not think it's funny or interesting.
Some people don't understand.
I know, he doesn't understand. I was like, Mikey, when we got married, did he think you were going to be married to a famous Twitter person? He's like, I still don't think I am.
Whatever, go back to your man cave.
Actually, we've got like a little like home, quote unquote, home theater. We have like a little, it's not a basement, it's a basement room. So there's like surround sound and like.
Sweet.
An ostentatiously big TV that he got on like super sale. This is where we're going to watch Star Wars.
Excellent.
To get used to it.
Yeah.
But people are like, oh, is this his man cave? And he and I are both like, don't fucking say those words to me. Nobody's like, man cave, it's a pits. Just like live in your fucking house.
You don't need to divvy it up.
I'm sorry, I'm mad now.
It's Matt Walsh. You have a right to be.
Not comedian Matt Walsh. Hemant, where can I find you on Twitter?
I'm at Hemant Mehta. You can go on Patreon/ Friendly Atheist Podcast. There's a comment there.
If anybody has any suggestions for our next donor
reward thing.
Reward, because we are gonna watch Star Wars.
We will. It'll happen.
Next week?
We'll figure it out. It won't happen next week.
You said next week today.
I did say next week. It won't happen next week. I'll tell you why next week.
Okay. So if anybody has any suggestions, it'll probably almost certainly be like making him and watch a thing. It's not going to be West Side Story because I want him to actually enjoy it and not like watch it ironically. You can find me at Blueberry, BlueBurie. If you, thanks to Terry again for writing in with a listener question, right? And I actually didn't have to make a call out today. Terry just wrote in to us. So you can email us at friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com. We will be releasing the next episode of Fables on the donor feed. It's going to be me and my husband talking about the book Tranny by Laura Jane Grace, which is excellent. You can hear about a really cool game that Mikey and his friends invented called Suck when they also used to eat spaghetti sandwiches. You'll hear all about my really classy husband's early 20s life. Is that it? Go to iTunes, give us a review. I read them all.
Five of the stars.
Five of the stars. If you have an opinion
on the stars.
Yeah, and if you have an opinion about my swearing, that's fine. You don't have to
give us five stars and then complain.
You don't have to tell anybody about it. You can just like hold it in your heart.
Or give 5 stars and complain all you want.
Oh, that's true. I'll read it, and I'll read it to my husband, and I'll complain about it. About you.
We'll hit you deeply on the inside, but...
It certainly does. I may have to go back to therapy. Who knows? Patreon.com/FriendlyIndiesPodcast.
You know where to find us.
Guys, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye.